these words. If you want to serve people like Jesus serves people, we need to see people the way Jesus sees people. As I thought about that good word, I thought, you know, it's kind of rare anymore to come across someone who actually sees people. I don't know about you, but I can lay my head down on the pillow at night and scan throughout the day and say, I don't know if I actually saw people today. I saw my calendar. I saw my to-do list. I saw my phone. Oh, I saw social media. But did I actually see people today? I like the definition that I read this week of intimacy. And the definition and explanation of intimacy was this. It was into me see. I thought about that. Into me see. That to have intimacy in a relationship is when you'll be able to see into another person. To see their heart. There's a closeness and a vulnerability that happens. There's a connection that happens where we get to know. And to be known is intimacy. And one of the main reasons we do not see people is because of the line. I've asked several people to help me this morning. So those volunteers, if you want to come on up, you can. So I want to talk about the line this morning. You can start right here at the line. Okay. Okay, inside our minds, we have a line. Now, we don't talk about this line. And very quickly, when we meet someone, we assess where they are in the line. Now, I thought I was an expert in lines because in high school and junior high, I experienced lines. And so I thought I had a PhD in lines. And so when my children, who then became teenagers and were in junior high and senior high, we talked about this, the line. And they would come in and say, you know, so-and-so's pretty cool. So-and-so's prettier, has more friends, or he's on this team or does this. And I would try to talk with them when they get discouraged about where they're on the line because I see what they were trying to do. They were trying to get to the front of the line. And I'm like, no, 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 that's not it. High school does not define you. And they struggle with that. I struggle with that in high school and junior high. Because we know that in that time, those in the front of the line were the cool, good looking. And those in the back of the line, well, maybe not quite as cool and not quite as good looking. Love you, brother. Okay, love you. So this line, so we don't talk about it, but these lines are there. And so we make decisions. And what tends to happen is after high school and junior high, and you know, we think, well, those lines are over, right? They're gone. I mean, we know we matured. And yet we know that the line is still there. Right? We know all about the line. Oh, we're more sophisticated about the line, right? We're more sophisticated. We know how to work the line. But each one of us, it's not the way it's supposed to be, but sometimes it's the way it is. Each one of us, When we meet someone or someone at work or play or out, whether it's in a restaurant and other places, we seem to put people in these lines. And we make a decision whether they are in front of us or behind us. And we make these snap decisions about where they do. And that, but we're sophisticated enough that we don't talk about it. Not like high school and junior high. There's also something else about the line that is really important. There's rules about the line. The first thing you need to do, the first rule is you face the front, right? You always face the front. And you try to get ahead. Now, here's where it gets a little awkward. Let's say that you were at the Crackpot coffee shop. And you were in line to get a latte. And you would do this. Turn around, and you would face that person. Now, that's kind of awkward, isn't it? Do you feel a little awkward, Judah? Right, a little awkward. Okay, so it doesn't seem right, right? Turn around, look the other way. It's a little awkward. It's like you're in my space, and it can be very awkward. All right, thank you. You can turn around now. Thank you. So, but there's rules. There's rules about line. It's about, you know, being looking towards the front and try to get ahead. And many times we really are focused on the front. We're focused on people who have more than we do. We know that people in the front line get VIP treatment. It's just the way it is. But sometimes we don't think about the line and like who's behind us. How do they feel? As we have figured out where they're at in the line. Sometimes we can feel very bad because we have this line, but it's there. And sometimes we can overlook people, undervalue people. Sometimes the vulnerable are in the back of the line, and yet we're facing forward, and so it's hard. And the thing about Jesus was this. Jesus did something radical. Radical for a junior and high school student, and radical for adults. See, Jesus had also a system in his time, and the religious people, the ones that were very religious, were at the front of the line. And those who were the least religious and had a mess in their life were in the back. And so we would expect that Jesus, the king, would hang out in the front of the line, right? But he doesn't. Jesus goes to the back of the line and hangs out with people in the back. He spent the majority of his time not in the front of the line, but in the back of the line. To the marginalized. And what Jesus did when he spent time in the back of the line, he showed them love. He pointed them to the Father. And he was asking them for a transformed life. And when Jesus called the 12 to himself, these disciples had a puffed out chest. Wow, we're one of the 12. Isn't that awesome? We get a fast pass to the front of the line. It's like at Hershey Park or whatever, these parks where they have these VIP lines that you can skip all of the lines and go right to the front. This is what the disciples thought they were getting. And Jesus does something that rocks their world. He says, "My disciple Judah, come here. I'm taking you to the back of the line." Takes them back there, and everyone moves up. He calls people to himself. He says, "What you have done to the least of these, you have done to me." If you want to experience the kingdom is not at the front of the line. The kingdom work is in the back of the line. So we have all have lines. Can we give them a hand? Thank you so much. You make a great line. All right. So the disciples have been arguing, have argued, who is the greatest? Because they wanted the front of the line. And Jesus does something, and we talked about this not too long ago, but Jesus talked about something that when arguing who's the greatest, he takes this child. He says, if you want to become great, you need to become like this little child. Now you have to understand the culture of the time. Children were devalued. They were the back of the line type of people. It's hard for us sometimes to culturally wrap our head around that. But Jesus talks about this humility and wonder and awe. And he says, the kingdom of God has come near with these children. And he uses them. And he values them. These back of the line people, example to those around Jesus. Now, can I just pause here for a moment? I want to add something. We have a great children's ministry here at Slate Hill. It's not great because we have a lot of staff and a lot of things going on. It's great because we have people who see value in children, who understand that the kingdom of God has come near to these children. And so we have so many dedicated people that serve in the nursery, that are nurturing our children. We have people that are teaching Sunday school. We have those that are helping out in children's ministry, our Wednesday Night Out program, and others. And they don't always get recognition for this, but this morning I want to just say that those people sometimes serve day in and week in and out. And they have a huge heart. And their heart is to welcome one of these little children. To welcome them into the kingdom. And we're always looking for more people who can help with this. Who their hearts connect with children, realizing it's not just something you do on a Sunday morning or a Wednesday evening. You are doing something that we described this morning when we dedicated Grayson. You are saying, Grayson, you are valued. And Grayson is not, it's not just the parents' responsibility, but it's for us as a church to work on raising up these children and walking alongside parents and these children and serving them and the consistency that they will see. So this morning, can we just give them a hand for all these children's ministry people? Just thank them. And so when they get, these children are welcomed to the kingdom, this idea of who is the greatest was on the disciples' mind. I would invite you to turn with me this morning to Matthew 20, 20 to 28. It's page number 1003 in your pew Bibles and also be up here. And hear what we read this morning from the Bible. It says, then the mother of Zebedee's sons, and his sons were James and John, came to Jesus with her sons and kneeling down asked for a favor of him. What is it you want? He asked. And she said, grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom. You don't know what you are asking, Jesus said to them. Can you drink the cup that I'm about to drink? We can, they answered. And Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared by my Father. When the 10 heard this, that's the others, they were indignant with the two brothers. And Jesus called them together and had a little session with them and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. But not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. So right before this conversation, back a little bit, Jesus gave them the news. He said, I'm going to die. It's going to be a horrible death. I'm giving you insider information. This is how the disciples responded. Okay, don't think I understand the implication, but what about us? What are we going to get out of this? Now, if I was Jesus, which I'm not, I'd be going like, are you kidding me? I just told you I'm about to die. But they are oblivious to his suffering. And the way they reacted is the same way that sometimes we respond. And the reason we respond like that is because of the line and other things in our life. Is because selfish ambition makes us insensitive to the needs of others. That we focus on ourselves and we're blind on what is going on around us. We don't see people. They wanted to be great. And if we're honest, we all share this. Now, what I find interesting, this is a little humor moment for me, as I discovered this week. This story is found in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But it's not found in John. I'm wondering, well, why didn't John pick this up? Why didn't John go with this story? I'm thinking, well, how's John going to write about the time he sent his mom to lobby Jesus about him? Sometimes there are just stories in life you don't want other people to know. And so I think he admitted that story. And if I was John, I would have probably done the exact same thing. You know how it is in life. Sometimes you don't want other people to know the stories that happen in your life. But when Jesus responds, what do you want? I think it's a really important question. When he says it to us, what do you want? He's getting to the heart of people. It's one of Jesus' favorite questions that he asked. He doesn't just give a response, he responds back with a question. But if you notice that Jesus does not rebuke them for their desire to be great. He doesn't say, well, you know, if people desire to be a great parent, a great spouse, a great worker. I mean, it's okay. Jesus did not rebuke them for wanting to be great. He just redefined what it means to be great. He says, become a servant. Work in the back of the line. And your path to greatness is to serve others. And then he gives an example. He says, hey, let's look at the Gentiles. Look at what they do. Look at their power grab. They lead out and they do things. But he says, not so with you. Serve. And he told his disciples, if you want to be great, then you need to serve. You need to be concerned about others around you. And Jesus then gives them a leadership training and says, also, it redefines what leadership looks like. It defines what life in the kingdom really looks like. And it's a whole lot different than what you maybe thought. And then in Matthew 19, Jesus talks about the line. Now, you might not see it necessarily as a line, but I call this line theology in Matthew 19, where he says this, the last shall be first, and the first shall be last. And so if we think about this kingdom, this way that goes against the stream of culture and what we've known throughout all these generations is this, that there's not a hierarchy. There's not a first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. Nowhere does Jesus talk about the line. or in the way that we think it. What Jesus seems to suggest is it's not a line here, but instead we are shoulder to shoulder. That's the kind of line that he envisions. And we're shoulder to shoulder at the cross. We are one deep. It doesn't matter the mess you made or the accomplishments that you can tell us. When it comes to Jesus and at the cross, he says we're only one deep, shoulder to shoulder, not in that line of culture. And we need to figure that out in our own lives. And one of the ways we want to do is to talk to others about this and figure that out. And too many times we have to understand that the way to deal this with people outside of ourselves, the people we come in contact with, is this. They might not know God. They might not even know that they matter to God. But here's the point. They will not know they matter to God until they first know they matter to us. And that's where we come in. And that's the challenge we've been talking about here the last couple weeks, about the one, the challenge for the one. And Jesus died on the cross, not in spite of being God, but because he is God. He lays down his life as a servant. And these disciples were trying to figure this out. We need to give them grace, because if we were in their same shoes, I'm not sure how I would respond. But he wanted the disciples to really understand this concept. And so we read in John 13, verses 3 to 5, these words. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from his meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. And after that, he poured water into his basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around them. A towel and a basin. Now, sometimes when we talk about John 13, we can talk about it in many different ways. And as Anabaptists, we talk about the significance of washing each other's feet and that service of that. But I think we have to understand the cultural difference between today and back then. What it really meant to wash someone's feet. They would walk these dusty roads. By the way, the same roads that the animals would walk, if you catch my drift. And the road was really dirty. And now it was mealtime, this wonderful Passover mealtime. And when they sit down, they didn't sit down on these high tables around eating. They would come into this room and the food was probably prepared for them. But when they went to sit around the table, it says they recline. Now, we see pictures of what that looks like, but it seems to suggest that your feet are not in front of you. The feet are beside you. They're kind of pushed out to you. In other words, someone else's feet is real in your space. And that was not working so well. But here's what happened. Visualize the scenario of the disciples around that meal. Think to yourself in your mind's eyes the looks that went around that room that day. The looks that went around, the looks, one of those looks that you've had and I've had. It's like, aren't you going to take care of this? You've had those looks, right? Or it's like, I'm higher in the hierarchy here a little bit. I was the first one Jesus called, and you know, and but eyes were going around the room, and no one stepped forward to wash feet. Now, I don't blame them, because a lot of people in this room are not feet people, right? You don't like feet. I mean, you don't want to, you see, maybe Thomas had bunions or something. You didn't want to mess with his feet. And so there was this look around. There was this idea that I'm not going to do it. I'm waiting for the next person to do it. And here's what happens. Jesus, who has all the authority, gets up and takes the equipment, the basin and the towel. And we can say it was now for us to repeat this. And I think it's a great idea. But for Jesus, this was not for a religious activity. For Jesus, this was simply, feet need to be washed. I need to wash people's feet. Jesus saw a need, and he met a need, and he humbled himself. And when he says he took off the outer garment and whatever that looks like, in some ways, in my image, I'm thinking about he took off what he had and took on the clothes of a servant. There was a transformation. And he says, I'm going to serve everyone. He humbled himself. And Jesus again showed another leadership lesson. And for others too, that leadership and greatness can be beyond you if serving is beneath you. So he took that towel and he started washing the disciples' feet. Can you imagine the king washing the disciples' feet? Nowhere in recorded history that I'm aware of, and commentators have talked about, have you seen where someone in that authority would wash someone else's feet. Nowhere is recorded that a rabbi would wash someone else's feet. This was counterculture. This was revolutionary. You also know that Jesus did not get up and say, okay, there's an elephant in the room. I'm just going to put it out there. We need some feet washed. Tell you what, this is a great learning experience for all you guys. Hey, Peter, get out your phone. We're going to do a selfie, do a Snapchat here. We're going to capture this moment for all of eternity. It's not what he does. Unannounced, he gets up and he starts washing disciples' feet. And he starts doing that. And he quietly did this because so many times we do things, we do it to build a brand, to puff ourselves up. But Jesus was there to teach the disciples, to show him what serving really looked like, to build character in his disciples that were now going to go out to the whole world, and to show him really who Jesus was, his identity. Now, my wife is in the room today, so we have to keep this. Dawn, would you please close your ears? Okay, thank you. Because this is between us and it stays in the room here between us. I'm going to tell you what happens sometimes. I mean, I'm capable of being a servant. And I'm also capable of making that servants about me. So with Dawn's ears closed and not hearing this because this is between us, okay, I'm going to confess something this morning. This is confession time. Several times, not the first time, not the second time, several times, I will be sitting at home watching TV. And all at once I hear a noise in the background. And it is the garage door opener, the garage door going up, and I can hear that. I jump out of my seat. I head out in the kitchen, and I start doing something. I'm just being honest here, people. Like, you've never done this. Come on. So I do this, and then Dawn comes walking in, and she's just like, she has this awe moment. It's like, oh, that's so nice. And I'm like, this is like maybe a romantic moment or something. This is awesome. And she just thinks I'm so much better or whatever. And I'm not. You see, I didn't do that for her per se. It was more about me to make me look good. That's not service. That's not serving someone else. Serving is when you do something when someone else is not looking. Or serving is when someone treats you like a servant. And how do you respond to that? See, it's easy sometimes to serve. It's easy to serve those outside of our home, right? I mean, sometimes it's harder to serve inside of our homes. Sometimes it's easier to serve a stranger that we don't know than someone who's at the table that night for dinner. Sometimes it's easier to help out a neighbor than it is to address something in your family. Sometimes it's easier to be polite to that waiter than it is to be polite to the people at the table that you're having dinner with at a restaurant. But you notice Jesus washed everyone's feet, even Judas's feet, who was going to betray him, and he knew that. And so I thought, well, how do we become a servant? How do we grasp the servant's heart? And I think if you truly grasp a servant's heart, we realize that it starts and cultivated our own homes, where people really know who we are, flawed and things, and those closest to us. And in a couple weeks, you're going to have an incredible opportunity, because Thanksgiving is coming. Families are coming together. You have a chance to do EGR. Extra grace required for your Thanksgiving meal or family systems. See, you know the one in your family that causes the trouble or doesn't quite work or fits in, and there's scuttle that goes around the family system, and so, you know, everyone knows where people are at in the line, and that one person is really in the back of our line. Now, you've tried different things. We've all tried different things how to make that work, but what if you tried? What if you blew their mind by serving them? What if you blew their mind by serving them? Because I believe if you serve someone like that in the back of the line, it changes the room. It could change Thanksgiving dinner. And so Jesus gives us other opportunities where he tells us to serve others. And one of the ways that I think is really important that we don't talk about maybe enough in the church is that this serving changes marriages. In Ephesians, we hear that Christ loved the church and describes that in marriage. And that husbands are supposed to love their wives as Christ loved the church. And what that seems to suggest to me is that we as husbands are supposed to give up our lives. And it doesn't mean that we die, per se. But this is what I think it does mean. I think it means 1,000 funerals in our homes a day of things that we want to have happen. That could be what he's talking about. And when it says, wives, love your husband as Christ loves, as a church loves Christ, he's talking about respect and mutual serving. And see, here's what tends to happen. No one wants to pick up the towel in marriages anymore. No one wants to get up and walk across the room and offer to do something. Too many times, we want to throw in the towel of marriage. And you know what Jesus does in this moment? Jesus tells to those people that are married and things are going rough to pick up the towel. Instead of throwing the towel out about marriage, he says, pick up the towel and serve. It may change the room. It may change the relationship. The next thing that happens is that when this washing of Jesus, of the disciples' feet happened, there was a slowness that happened. If you read the text, there's a slowness of things slowing down, about Jesus taking his time intentionally, looking at each one, washing their feet, but also looking at them. Into me see. Intimacy he had with each one, even Judas. And he slowed down. And I know if you're like me, I like to be efficient and effective and get things done. But I think there's times in life when we encounter people, when we're with those, we want to really see people, really see them. Sometimes we have to slow down, maybe be completely inefficient for his kingdom. Over the last several weeks, I have been talking about this Thanksgiving challenge. And we're getting close to Thanksgiving. And that challenge, if you weren't here, is this. It's very simple. It's that you would look at one person, not 50, not 100, that you would look to serve one person in a way that is different than you've served them before, whether it's your neighbor, someone at work, maybe it's taking them a pie, maybe it's going over to your neighbor and sitting down and just listening to them, hearing their story, and just being with them. Maybe it's someone you encounter. Maybe it's you're doing something you haven't done for a long time for someone else. Maybe you are just going to do something for someone here in this church community that maybe needs something. We can get all worked up about how all the problems are in this world and how everything is just out of control and everything. And yet Jesus tells us, I think, just serve the one in front of you. Serve the one in front of you. And so that's our Thanksgiving challenge. And I've also said for you to email in any of these stories that you have, because we need to hear stories for other people to be inspired by that. And I've received several of those. Thank you. And Megan's email box is not full yet. So there's still room. You can send to the church office your stories. You want to hear them. And so Jesus gave the example. And Jesus shows us that we need to know how to serve the one. And we may be inefficient, and we might not have it all figured out, and we might even screw it up. But I believe God is faithful when we take one step towards someone. And we never know really the outcome of that until we get to heaven. But in the meantime, we need to be faithful and serve the one. And it just may change the room.